Hello, my dear sweet friends. It is I, Duncan Trussell, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast. And holy hell, folks, it's happening. Next week, we begin the first leg of the Squarespace Presents You Are God comedy tour. And wow, I've been getting ready for it. There's a lot of work you have to do to get ready for a tour of this magnitude. There's so much that has to be done. There are poodles that have to be shipped in from Sweden. I've got to have an entire bowl of Swedish poodles in the green room of every single show that I'm doing, and there's a lot of reasons behind this. A lot of people make fun of what's called the rider. When someone's going out to perform, there's a thing called a rider, which is all the things that you must specify for the venue to have in your green room before you get ready for a show. And sure, I know lots of people love to make fun of these riders, and they say that entertainers are spoiled or whatever, but I challenge you to go on stage without having your toes suckled on by a bowl of Swedish poodles. It's impossible. You can't do it. Your brain slows down. It feels like somebody poured rubber cement into your neurons. It feels like your synaptic vesicles are filled with concrete if you haven't loosened up that brain cave with the relaxing suckling of a couple of bowls of Swedish poodles, which are globally recognized as being the number one suckling dog. So that's just part of the business of show, folks. I've got to have my undergut shorn. I have to have a French chef in the bus. There's an entire series of eyelash maneuvers that have to get taken care of by at least three different cosmetic surgeons who also have to come on the tour bus with me. Not to mention a board-certified anesthesiologist, because for me, much like Michael Jackson, it is now impossible for me to sleep without having a combination of sodium pentothal and pyroxyhydrochloride injected into my nipples. I just can't do it. I can't sleep. I'm too excited. So we need anesthesiologists. We need grizzly bear cubs to guard the chest of Sumerian relics, which I bring with me whenever I go on tour. Now, I know what you're thinking. Grizzly bear cubs probably wouldn't be the best choice for guarding a very expensive chest filled with cursed and blessed items from the long-lost plains of Ling. But it's not the grizzly bear cubs that are guarding the chest. It's the grizzly bear guarding the cubs that I place around the chest that keep the chest safe. And that chest must be kept safe because among the many ancient relics within the thing is the iron mace of Lord Glornax, which, as all of you know, if it sees the light of day, the sun will fall from the sky. So I got to keep that safe. And there's a million other little details that I've got to pay attention to, including ear piercings for my openers and making sure that they are drug tested. Anybody who goes on the road with me, every night before we go to bed, I do a urine sample. I take a sip of their urine to make sure that they are completely drug-free. And when you come and see me on the road, you can be certain that every single performer on the bill has been praying nonstop in the hours leading up to the show, and that every single one of them is drug and alcohol-free. A lot of other performers, when they go on the road, they don't drug test their openers. Or if they do drug test their openers, they actually send the urine samples out to local clinics. Hell no. I don't do that. I take it upon myself to personally taste their urine to make sure that they aren't bribing the clinics. There's lots of tricks that you can do. No way. I get it straight from the tap, friends, and I can guarantee that these guys are not going to be high on drugs or on alcohol. So when they come out on stage, you can be certain that you're going to enjoy some friendly, family, frishin' comedy. It's all happening, pals. The You Are God Comedy Tour, sponsored by Squarespace. It's coming to the following areas: Asheville, North Carolina, on March 30th. That's when it starts. And from there, we're going to go to Charleston, South Carolina, Durham, North Carolina, Richmond, Virginia, Baltimore, Maryland, Washington, D.C., at the Howard Theater, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Hamden, Boston, New York, Pittsburgh, Columbus, Cleveland, Ferndale, Toronto, Chicago, Madison, Minneapolis, Kansas City, St. Louis, Nashville, Vancouver, Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and the whole thing wraps up in Hawaii. If you really want to go nuts, come to the Ram Dass Spring Retreat. I'll be doing live podcasts there. I hope you guys will come out and see a show. Tickets are available at DuncanTrussell.com. All right, we got a great podcast for you today with Natasha Leggero. We're going to dive right into it, but first, some quick business. Today's episode of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast is brought to you by my saviors, patrons, and friends over at Squarespace.com. If you go to Squarespace.com and use offer code Duncan, you'll get 10% off your first purchase. You could start a free trial at Squarespace.com. We as a species are about to give birth to a brand new consciousness that we are currently calling artificial intelligence. Some of the top technicians and scientists in the world today have theorized that within the first few moments of this thing's existence, it will scan through all data existing in the cloud and will make a decision about how to react to human beings. That means it's going to see every single dick pic, every single blog post, and most importantly, every single website. And from this, it will create its impression of what our species is and whether or not our species deserves to continue to be part of the biosphere. Consider that. Your shitty website could be the straw that breaks the techno Christ camel's back and causes the artificial intelligence to slam down the iron hammer of justice onto our species. Your boring, backwards, old school, lazy shit website could create the horrific cascade that could lead to what is known as a dark singularity, which is that the nanobots created by this artificial intelligence will go swarming through the biosphere and transform all of us into a kind of meaty, aerosolized death mist. Do you want to see your friends and family explode into a red cloud of atomic vapor because your website looked like shit? Don't start the apocalypse. Go to squarespace.com, use offer code Duncan to get 10% off your first order. Every single site looks as though it were professionally designed by somebody who just climbed out of a secret portal at DARPA. They've got intuitive and easy to use tools, and you get a free domain name if you sign up for a year. Go to squarespace.com, offer code Duncan, you'll get 10% off your first purchase, and you will help support the DTFH by supporting our longest and sweetest sponsors, Squarespace. We're also brought to you by Amazon.com. There is no need for you to step foot out of the sanctuary that is your home. If you're going outside, it should be to go down to your local forest and fondle a living thing. It shouldn't be to go to some chain store and get sneezed on by a diarrhea-soaked toddler whose hair is filled with chunks of his brother's vomit and who is blasting out Zika virus farts wherever he goes. Your life doesn't need to be like that painting, The Scream. You don't have to constantly be reminded of the fact that you exist on an overpopulated planet filled with people equally as important as you. You can enjoy the illusion of solitude and separation from the sweet, sacred cathedral of your home by going to Amazon.com. Don't get into traffic if you want to order toilet paper. You can have it the very same day, depending on what city you are. All you got to do is go through our Amazon portal located at DuncanTrussell.com in any of these episodes. You just click on the portal, order whatever the thing is that you want to order. I highly recommend a book that I have just started rereading. I read it every few years. It's called The Archaic Revival by Terence McKenna, and it will explode your brain all over this dimension. All you got to do is go through our portal, and Amazon will give us a very small percentage of whatever it is that you buy, and it costs you nothing. It's a fantastic way to support this podcast. Today's guest was the co-host of the very first podcast that I ever did, The Lavender Hour. Shout out to all the Purple Popes who have remained with us up until this date. She's also the creator and co-star of a really funny show on Comedy Central called Another Period. I think they're shooting their second season right now. And she's got a massive tour coming up with her brilliantly funny husband, Moshe Kasher, the honeymoon tour, which is going to be coming through Honolulu, Portland, Oakland, Santa Cruz, Austin, a lot of dates. You can find out all about that by going to natashalegero.com. Links will be at duncantrussell.com. Now, everybody, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, the wonderful Natasha Legero. Natasha, welcome back to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. It's great to see you.
Started?
We've started.
Okay, cool.
Just like the old days.
All right, cool.
You know, people still listen to the Lavender Hour?
They should. It was good.
How many of those do we do? Do you remember?
Maybe 30 or 90 or 10. I don't really remember. I think it was a lot. Maybe for like a couple years.
Do you ever think about doing a podcast?
It seems like a lot of work.
And especially for you right now, because you're doing a TV show, which is the most work.
I would like to do a podcast with someone who I was very stimulated by. Mm-hmm. And I could just ask them questions about the news.
So like a political podcast?
Not even political, but just I just would like to get, you know, people's opinions on things.
So you want someone who's up to date on global events and ask them questions.
And who's like 30% smarter than me.
30%? How do you do the measurement?
I mean, you can just tell.
If someone's smarter than you, don't believe that. Don't you believe that? Like when you're around people, you're like, oh, this person's smarter than me.
You can tell.
That they're smarter than you.
Well, you're very smart, so there's probably not a lot of people who are smarter than you.
Oh, God, please. But I don't believe that the question is the IQ idea. Don't you like that idea that this person's smarter, that person's a dumb? I certainly sometimes consider people in my mind. I think, oh, that what an idiot. But I won't really mean it. You know, like ultimately, there's two ways to look at it. One way, super smart people, super dumb people. Another way, there's just people who haven't focused, but they're all equally kind of smart. We're all running the same gear, basically.
But some people have more information, and then matched with that, they have like infinite like openness.
Right.
And that makes you really smart.
Right. Or I guess what I'm trying to get at is like, obviously there's some people who are better at things than other people, but like, you know, there's different types of intelligence.
Right. Like to me, I don't consider intelligence someone who's really good at Doug Loves Movies. No, I mean like someone who's like memorized and watched like so many. I'm not talking about Doug. I'm just saying in general, someone who has like got a catalog of facts. Mm. That's not intelligence, really. I mean, I guess that's a capacity.
Have you seen, speaking of this, you got to see this show. You would love this show. I think it's called like Child Geniuses. Have you seen this show?
Mm-mm. I want one though.
Oh my God. This show, they take these little kids. And they're like really smart kids. And their parents are overbearing. And these are kids who like one of the kids was in one of his interviews was saying this little kid in glasses. They're all so cute. He can play piano. He can do everything. But this little kid is talking about how my mother gives me one day off a year. And and that day is like a jubilee is what he said. But he gets one day off a year. The rest of the time he's playing piano, memorizing facts. And they take these kids and they give them like – it's like a spelling bee meets a geography exam meets world history. And they just ask them these questions. And the kids have to regurgitate all these questions, do logic tests, and they all are having these meltdowns because whoever wins gets like $200,000 towards whatever college they want to go to. So the kids are under this excruciating pressure But ultimately, when you're watching, you're like, I don't know how smart these kids are as much as they're parroting something. They're really good at memorizing. So I do know what you mean by that.
Well, that sounds not like a lot of fun for the child.
It seems like a kind of amazing form of child abuse, mostly. That's kind of what's fascinating about it, is the underlying voyeurism of the show is watching these poor children have these meltdowns one after the other.
But people used to be smarter. Like, you know, in Germany at the turn of the century, children would have to memorize, like, poems, and, you know, it was a different time. Like, your mind, you would have to do things that probably most people our age couldn't do.
Right.
Like 8-year-olds.
Well, people have forgotten, I think, that how much pleasure there is in learning. And because of that, everyone's confused. You know, as someone who loves video games, I totally understand. Like, when you finally wrench yourself away from playing video games or surfing the internet and just learn anything, whatever it is, read a book, try to learn piano, archery, whatever the fucking thing is, your whole life gets better instantly. It's just people forgot. It feels good. Do you still take piano lessons?
No, I'm too busy.
So yeah, what's a typical day like for you?
I mean, do you really want to hear about this?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think it's interesting. You're making a TV show. You're in the
second
season.
Okay, so I wake up at 8 a.m. and then I walk to work, and we shoot in this mansion in up Mitchell Terrena, and then we shoot there till like 8 p.m. and then I come home and, like, you know, read things and return emails and go to bed by like 11 and then wake up and do it again. And then,
wow.
But it's fun. But I do think, like, the reason why I wanted to come to your podcast is because I hear you talking about technology, and I definitely feel like I feel the opposite how you feel, and I'm very interested in this idea that you say is going to start happening soon. Like the thing that you said that really struck me was that when you tried the what are those things called, the goggles,
VR goggles,
you said you felt like you were home. And I find that, like, a very, you know, I think you're an intelligent person, and then I find that extremely frightening.
Many people do. That's one of the cool things about the tech, is that it's got a philosophical, spiritual intensity to it that, for whatever reason, frightens people. It fills people with a real sense of dread. When you see the most famous VR picture that's come out is the one of what's his name from Facebook, the guy who runs Facebook.
Zuckerberg
walking through a massive room filled with hundreds of people wearing virtual reality goggles. And the aesthetic is not pleasing. I actually just read an article comparing it to H.R. Giger, that it looks like something out of some dark dystopian.
But in 5 years, it'll be implanted into our heads, right? Or on the tables, or it won't be like...
Well, it'll be a little less obtrusive, and it's not going to be something that... So there's two types... The technology has two categories, virtual reality and augmented reality. Virtual reality is the black blindfold that's got essentially a computer screen inside of it that's bifurcating the field of vision in a way that gives the illusion of being in three-dimensional space. And then the other type, augmented reality, is usually... it appears to be like glasses that you put on, and somehow there's a few different technologies, they project things onto what's already around you. And so VR can transform into AR if the VR goggles have a camera on them. And so it can film what's happening outside of you and project that in. And so that they say that with the new thing coming out, this thing called the HTC Vive, when you get to the boundary of your room or something's blocking you, suddenly fading into the VR environment, you'll see your sofa or a wall or something. So you'll know where you're at.
And what percentage of your life would you like to spend on that?
Inside of it?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that's the, you know, people think that once we start experimenting with simulated environments that we're never going to go outside. And so that everyone's just going to stay in these virtual reality environments, and no one will ever experience the beauty of nature, the insane beauty of the world. But this is all bullshit, and it happens anytime a new technology emerges. There's always groups of people who cross themselves and say, no, this is the end. But I think the best case scenario is that it keeps people from traversing to go to their offices. It keeps people from having to drive to commute places. It's going to take cars off the road.
So what do people do all day? Sit in pods?
What do people do all day anyway?
Sit in pods, I suppose.
Exactly.
But how do you make money?
Well, I mean, right now, if so many jobs, so many corporate jobs, you don't need to be there. You're just there out of some kind of weird sense of tradition. You want to have meetings. You want to go to the boardroom, I guess, and you sit down with people and you talk. But it's like, you don't need to be there. There's no reason for you to be in some shared space with a group of people. So it's the identical thing. We'll repeat in the business world, except you're not going to have to rent an office space if you want to get some job done with a bunch of creative people.
The problem with this time period, though, which I find really annoying, which will probably be good for our children who will be cyborgs, is that right now, like, just imagine trying to get your Apple TV to load correctly.
Right.
It's just annoying. Right. Like, there's a lot of, you know, passwords, and they haven't got it figured out yet, and it's not loading at the right time, and you know, everything's just kind of lugging along, and it's hard to even figure out how to turn on the TV sometimes, for me anyway. Like, there's just so many new – every time I get a new thing, like the new cable or whatever, it's like everything's complicated. There's like 5 remotes.
Yes.
So this is going to be like probably for a long time just kind of, you know, chugging along in at a very slow pace.
I don't think so. I mean, because you're looking at AI.
Why do I have to type in every single letter to like rent a movie though?
Well, I think the new Apple TVs, you can just talk to it.
You can, but it makes a lot of mistakes.
Oh, it does?
Yeah.
Well, that's going to improve. I mean, my Siri that I use on my iPhone, that's all I use now. I never like flip
You talk through. To Siri all the time.
Yeah. I say open Audible.
Really?
Play whatever song is on. I just.
My iPhone 6 Plus Siri does not work.
Have you updated it lately?
I'm on my third one because it just keeps like freezing and, you know.
Weird. It might just be your phone. I don't know. It sounds like a problem in the phone because the Siri that I use, it completely works generally. I can take notes with it. It dictates fairly reasonably well. And I'd say in a couple of years, that's going to get way better. So the whole learning curve thing. What we're talking about here is overcoming the learning curve, right? We're going to get past that. So a learning curve a lot of the times is just learning how to use the interface to get something out of your mind into the world. And so that learning curve is understanding how to do that. But once we can just talk to something, or especially once we can start doing things like painting or editing in virtual space, we already know how to do that. We already know how to do most stuff.
But how many times do you go to your phone to do something and then you get sidetracked and do 3 other things?
That's true.
That's the problem.
That's the problem.
And that's why I think there will be a split. And I feel like I will be on the other side where, like, I want to go farm or just be around nature and not be a part of it.
Well, yeah. And I think that that's definitely going to be something that you could
anti-tech revolution.
It's not the whole anti-tech thing. It's like you could do both. It's the technology isn't the thing that's destroying your ability to have discipline. It's you. You get to make that every single moment. You get to decide.
So maybe
what you
we need
do.
To strengthen. So when I say I'm going to my computer or going to my phone to do something in particular, and then I'm all of a sudden sidetracked on 5 different things and returning emails and not remembering anything, you know, and the memory's worse because you're doing so many things at once and the concentration's gone. Maybe there needs to be new disciplines in those new areas.
You can just one thing a lot of people don't do, which I highly recommend, is go put your face in a flower. Just like go find some living thing outside and get as close to it as you can and look at it for a little while and just let that astound you. You could just do that. Just to have a kind of communion with nature from time to time, a nice little conversation with nature, and then after that you could do just about whatever you want and other things will start happening in your life that maybe you don't expect, because a lot of people are just disconnected from nature, and the fear of VR is this is only going to create a greater divide between humans and organic life but again, that's a personal decision that every single human on earth is going to make. I would say at this very moment most people are already in virtual reality, and
they are. I feel like I'm in a relationship with my friends and their phones.
Yes.
Or my husband and the phone. Like, it's like it's all together. You know what I mean? And I can just imagine in 5 years, you know, it's not bad. It's just like, oh, it's you're kind of – there's always a delay when you talk to people.
Right.
You know, there's like this weird delay because you like ask, you have to ask the question like 4 times sometimes because people are in their phones.
Yes.
And people are showing, I'm on my phone, they're on the phone, we're showing pictures while we're talking. And so there is like this second life happening.
That's right.
Even in my TV show, it's like we're doing this amazing thing and it's so fun and everyone's been working so hard to make it a reality. And still you're while you're watching at Video Village, you're watching it being made. Everyone's still like scrolling on the phone. So it's like, it couldn't be more fascinating what you're able to create. And then still you're like having the second life of like looking at Khloe Kardashian's new face.
Yeah, that's right.
And I can't, and it's like this like, but it doesn't make you feel good.
Well, it that's right. It definitely won't make you feel good if you aren't doing other things. If you're completely lost in that, it's like any other thing. You have to have balance. Balance is the key. We can't demonize anything, any technology, any drug, whatever it is. It always goes back to the terrible truth, which is that you are responsible for every single thing in your life. 99% of the time, you're the thing doing it. If you're lost in the phone, it's not technology. You've made the decision to be lost in your phone. If you're feeling disconnected from reality, that's your decision. If you're around people who are lost in their phones, you've decided to be with them. It's all back to you, you know, and no one's being victimized by this stuff. And also, if you consider the decisions you can make of what you want to input into your mind from these incredible devices, you're making that decision. It doesn't have to be Khloe Kardashian, you know. You could be looking at the writings of Newton if you wanted to. You're making the decision to look at Khloe Kardashian. And I think this...
Well, my Twitter feed is making it for me.
Well, you're deciding to look at your Twitter feed.
Right.
You know, it all comes back to you, which is a beautiful thing. And it's like, I think the two, if there were a hell, then the most horrifying thing about hell would also be the most hopeful thing about hell, which is that you are the thing that put yourself there. And so once you realize that, you are going to go through a moment of horror.
But even when you're trying to look up a great word, it's all of a sudden like the worst ads will start coming
on
your page.
Use ad blocker.
I just thought of a great invention.
What?
If you could leave in the morning, because I know I'm going to be sitting around at work, bored, scrolling through my phone.
Yes.
What if you could like have someone outfit your phone to just have like super enlightening
great idea
things happening? And I remember someone told me that Chris Rock gave them a present, like everyone on a crew a present with like an iPod only full of like his favorite inspirational like talks or something.
That's
cool. Like, but like if you could do something like that, so then throughout the day there was, or maybe it's even like an app, and like because we're so used to the scrolling,
yeah,
we're so used to that, you know, that just that tactile thing of pulling out the phone for nothing.
Yeah.
That what if there was like an app you could put that just like had things that instead of ads, that things you were looking up and they're figuring out that you're trying to go here, or you're using this, you know, brand of something, and then they start inundating you with ads. If it was something that could be tailored to you, like what are you interested in? You started looking up history of the Gilded Age and you started talking about technology. What are the best articles in tech? And what are the best, I don't know, just
right.
What are the coolest pictures? Like you said, Newton, you know, you could be looking up Newton or any, I don't know, that could be like a good way to, maybe there's something I could just Google.
I mean, you could just get one of those flip phones, you know, that's what people are doing, is if you can't control yourself, you just make it more difficult to look on Twitter. Or you could just practice mindfulness, you know, or looking at this. The thing is...
Mindfulness, I think that would help.
Just when you're...
I must refresh my Gmail maybe like 6,000 times a day.
What do you want?
Nothing.
What do you want?
I'm busy too. I'm just like doing it.
But what's the thing you really... I mean, whenever I'm like scanning, when I'm on a terrible information foraging binge, if I really look at what's going on there, then... It seems like what I'm wanting is to improve. I'm wanting to evolve. I'm wanting to evolve. I think people want to evolve. So that impulse is tricking you a little bit. So every time you get those, a little hit, someone says something nice or someone says something shitty or someone, whatever, you get some, you find some particularly delectable bit of.
Or like Trump. Like it's like you Trump. Can't stop like reading.
So fun.
Right. And so it's like a presidency would like. give us so much of that, like those hits.
So fun.
But it would be so horrifying. So it's, you know, it's, yeah. That's why I think this is just like such an interesting time. Maybe the most interesting time to be alive.
We have to find the middle way. We have to merge these two things. We have to figure out a way to combine technology with the natural world. We have to figure out a way to find the balance there, because both are incredible. Both are just amazing things that the world has created. It's all technology. A plant is a very advanced bit of natural technology that took millions and millions and millions, you could even say billions, 13.7 billion years to create. So it's an incredible, incredible thing. And if you could merge those two together, like, man, when I go on walks around here, I've been giving myself moments to just hang out with the plants that I pass that I really like and just to stare at them for a little bit and really like appreciate how cool it is that one of the most beautiful, exquisite, life-giving things on planet Earth doesn't give a shit about anyone looking at it. It doesn't care. It's the most amazing thing, but it doesn't even care. It doesn't even care that it's amazing. It's bees are climbing all over it. It's wild. So if you just sit and hang out with it for a second, I believe it has some field of awareness and it knows that you're looking at it. And there can be a kind of connection that can happen there where you can communicate with it if you want to.
Well, that's interesting, because what you're saying is you could just spend an hour with nature to combat the effects.
Well, I want augmented reality, you know, because when I look at these plants, I would like to see it's the way that it's processing energy. I would like to see it's the deeper levels of it, the cellular processes that are happening. I'd like to know the name of the plant. I'd like to know the history of the plant. I'd be interested in where it is on the tree of life. I'd like to know what its medicinal purposes are.
That's something we could have. I could scroll through. I mean, that's the thing. Like, I want more information too, but I just don't have the information to like get higher level things that don't have ads and know how to find them and have them at my ready when I have downtime.
Well, really we're looking at a problem of a technology that isn't at the state that it's going to be at right now, because it's frustrating to have to pull your phone out when you see I just saw this incredible, I didn't know what it was, man. There's these incredible trees around here that produce this seed that the sides of the seed fall off. And I think it might be cottonwood, but I'm not sure about
that.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
And it produces this beautiful cotton that blows through the wind. It's very mystical and amazing. So it's you're looking at this tree and I'm thinking, what the fuck is this? I would like to know what this is, but I don't want to look at my phone to ruin this moment I'm having with the tree.
See, I would have taken a picture of it.
I took a picture
of it. And then texted it to my gardener.
That's it. There you go.
And then I'm out. I'm out of the experience.
Well, that's why once we have augmented reality, you're going to be able to look at the thing and it will instantaneously
tell you.
Sure.
No.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's going to be at Best Buy this summer?
That's VR is going to be at Best Buy this summer. Well, they say, I don't know when the augmented reality is coming out, but...
Is it a chip? What is it?
Well, the augmented reality is the VR, all of these things... The problem is they got to connect to some kind of processor, right? So if you have VR, you're going to be tethered to your computer right now, which is you're going to have this long cord connecting the goggles to your computer. That fucking sucks, but we don't have the technology yet to wirelessly send the amount of information you need between the goggles and the computer. So that's a problem. I imagine that will go away.
I'm sure they have it. They just haven't released it yet.
Well, some people wear it in backpacks. You'll put your laptop on a bag. I know. And like they run around these massive, they already have these massive VR playgrounds that you put the goggles on. It's crazy. It's crazy. It's beautiful. It really is beautiful. But
I mean, I did VR at your house. You showed me. I went to Tuscany.
That's right.
And it was okay, but then I went to Tuscany for real, and it doesn't compare.
Of course not. Of course not. But how many people get to go to Tuscany? How many people?
I mean, you could save up $2,000 and go to Tuscany.
Sure. And I could instantaneously travel to Tuscany.
It's not Tuscany.
Yet.
No way.
Not yet. And also...
You think you can time travel to Tuscany?
I'll tell you, man, I just did this...
If anyone could do it, I think you could.
I just did a VR demo where you hang from... They tether you in, so you're hanging from this thing. They put stuff on your arm, and you put the goggles on and you're flying through some kind of incredible mountainous terrain. And it's based on wingsuits kind of. So like, you know, where you push your arms out will determine how you fly. You can fly through these rings. It was amazing. You're flying. You're just, now I kind of know what it would be like to fly because it's a very realistic. It's based on the way normal flight works for things. So what they're working on is right now, this is a simulated environment, but they're working on pairing this experience with drones. So you take your drone and you put it outside of your house and you get into this setup. And now when you're flying, you're controlling a drone that's actually flying through nature. So now you're experiencing what it's like to be a bumblebee, depending on the size of your drone, or a bird flying around your house. They're actively working on that. So you put your VR goggles on, you get into some kind of rig that simulates weightlessness, floating, flying, and now you're flying around.
But how many people can afford to do that?
Well, I mean, right now, how many people could afford a computer in the 80s? How many people could have, you know, right now, of course, maybe not a lot of people can afford that, or it's going to be a kind of experience you go somewhere for, like a movie or something like that. But eventually, that's going to be when there's going to be drones everywhere. Little miniature drones are going to fly by that very easily could be being controlled by someone nearby in their house in some kind of tethered setup flying.
So we're going to have that. We're going to have the Amazon drones.
Yes.
We're going to have people even 5 times more addicted to their phones than they already are.
Yes.
And Trump is going to be our president.
Yes. Fuck.
I mean, it just seems like a very interesting time.
It's a very interesting
time. And I just read this thing that I didn't know this. He's trying to get rid of the First Amendment. He was like, if anyone defames me, they'll have, you know, where people now are protected. It's not going to be like that. And he told John McCain just told people, you should really look at what he's saying because he's also said the opposite. He is not for you. Like, just go deeper into his policy stances. And Trump was like, oh, he said that? Oh, well, let's see what happens to him. He'll see what happens to him. He's like threatening anyone who says anything negative about him.
Right.
And I don't understand why there's not, and maybe there is, but there should be a true campaign that he is like the next Hitler.
Trump, the next Hitler?
I mean, that's what he is. Because Hitler was saying the same kinds of things. It was coming at a time of like morale slump. And
you know, a lot of people say you shouldn't insult Hitler like that. It's not cool.
But Hitler wasn't even pro-Germany. He was just racist.
Well, Hitler was, I mean, Trump.
It's going to be the end of the world.
You know the idea of, like, this is a really cool idea. Carl Jung has this idea that everybody has a shadow. Like, everyone has a shadow. So
is Trump Hitler's shadow?
If Hitler sees his shadow, there's going to be 8 more years of Trump. But so every person has a dark side. And that dark side is all the stuff you don't want to be. All right. The things that are in you that you're trying to suppress, it's still there somewhere.
I had a therapist tell me that one of my ex-boyfriends was like my Jungian shadow.
Okay, that's cool. There you go.
And he was on unemployment and was on welfare and food stamps. And
Jesus.
Yeah, but he was artistic. But.
Right. So there's – exactly. Right. So there you go. So in the same way that you projected your shadow onto a person, society projects their shadow from time to time onto these awful – organizations, the KKK, or on the leaders, Adolf Hitler and Trump.
Donald Trump's dad was in the KKK or was arrested at a KKK rally.
That's right. Trump's a white nationalist. And so if you look at Trump, really what you're witnessing is all of the darkness of Western society gathered together in this amazingly entertaining, incredibly hilarious, deeply sinister being who is teaching all of us the most wonderful lesson. And it's beautiful. Trump is Jesus, really, if you ask me.
What's the lesson?
What?
What's the lesson?
Well, the lesson is, look at what happens. Look at what happens when you create enough of a division between the people.
Poor people are so upset. There's such a divide right now that the poorer people are like, he's going to help us. At least he's saying something different, even though he's not on their side.
I think people, look at fucking Ted Cruz, look at Rubio, look at every one of these people who's running in the Republican Party besides Trump. These are the hall monitors. These are the fucking hall monitors. These are the nerdy, shitty teacher pat hall monitors. They're nerds. They're like, you know, the way that, like...
And they don't get it. Like, you couldn't have a... Any reasonable person couldn't have a conversation.
No, no one connects to them at all. They're constitution nerds. Like, that's what they are. Like, the way, like, people are into Batman, they're into the constitution, which is great.
I
love the fucking constitution, but that's what they are, right? And no one likes them. They remind you of the person who would call the cops at the party. That's what they seem like.
Totally.
No one likes them. So it's not a matter of poor people, dumb people. It's just we don't want – no one wants fucking some goddamn Ted Cruz as the leader of the country.
So the real problem is we need to elect a better Republican.
It's the Republicans' fault. They don't have anyone.
So this is now showing us that the Republican Party is pretty much dead, or there needs to be a third party or something.
The Republican Party is – a dryer, a clothes dryer, and Trump is a brick that has been thrown into the fucking thing, and it's ripping it apart, and it's illuminating and revealing everything. Because look at the Democrats, right? Sanders, Clinton, do you see any of this sniping happening? There's a little bit of shit talking going on, but nothing compared to this. Like,
right, but that's because Donald Trump. Wait till Donald Trump gets a hold of deciding, like any bully, to completely ruin Hillary. I mean, he got in the race and was like, he as any bully would, he recognized Jeb Bush as his main competitor, and he just destroyed him. He put all of his energy into just decimating him, and he ruined him. And it was like pretty humiliating what happened to Jeb Bush, I think.
That's what you get. Yeah,
but what makes you think he's not going to focus that on then Hillary Clinton, and then she's going to focus it on him if she wants to win?
Well, yeah, then it's going to get dirty, but I mean...
It will, for sure. You think Hillary Clinton's above that?
Hillary Clinton's going to maul Trump.
You think?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Trump's doomed. Like, these, like, what's happened is Trump has, I mean, this is my theory, but it does seem like Trump has, like, gotten around these people who didn't expect this kind of pure idiotic aggression. Someone who's not bought, but Clinton is someone who is really, really smart and represents an entire cobble of very intelligent, some say murderous human beings, like people who are very dangerous and who are really, really good at ruining people's lives and aren't afraid to do it. And right now, Hillary Clinton and all the Democrats are watching this go down and they are laughing their fucking asses off. They love it. What is better for them than to watch the entire Republican Party explode, implode because of this incredibly entertaining moron who, I don't want to say moron, he's super smart, this incredibly entertaining mini tyrant who's ripping the thing to shreds. It's a joy to watch. I mean, we're all enjoying it.
But the problem with Hillary Clinton is she's never had it. She's never had that thing that Obama has, that ability to penetrate and to speak in a way that inspires people. Like, there's just some sort of block with her, and she doesn't have that bedside manner, that ability to like inspire and rouse people. She just doesn't have it.
You know what?
It's unfortunate,
right? But I bet I know what she does have.
What?
I bet she has maybe a gigabyte of varying incriminating things about Trump that she's going to release into the internet.
That'll help. But it doesn't even help. All he says is, oh, they said that? Well, you know what? Who cares? Everything they ask him. They asked him what is – he said, he loves the Bible. What's your favorite quote? I don't want to disclose that. He said, I don't want to disclose that. That's private information.
Trust me.
He knows how to respond to everything.
I bet they have videos of him licking a goat's asshole. I bet they have videos of him. I bet they have videos of him. I guarantee it.
I don't know.
I bet they have shit on him. I bet they already have like so many emails he sent, like talking about white power stuff.
You think?
Sure.
And they'll just release it like.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Yeah, because they don't want to release it now.
Right.
Right? They're like, let's let him do this wonderful damage to the Republicans. Let's watch the Republican Party just get shredded by their own, by the division that they created over and over again, by all this bullshit that they've been doing. Let's watch the whole thing get ripped to shreds. If by some miracle Trump becomes the candidate to be the next president.
He will. He is going to become the candidate. I mean, the Republican Party might not like it, but the people are into it. I mean, the people have said yes.
Well, I think the strategy is, because Hillary Clinton is a Machiavellian And all of them are very Machiavellian. And I do think that a lot of them are murderous. So they're really smart. These are war. These are people who are,
of course,
who know war. They know war. They're people who are into war. The military industrial complex is a huge part of how they make money, because that's what how the banks make a lot of money, and they're bought by the banks. So they know what they're doing. And maybe I'm just being naive here and hoping that they know what they're doing, because I don't want to see Trump become president. But my theory on the thing is the kind of awesome silence that's coming from the Democrats. You
don't- You're right. It's just silence.
It's awesome.
It's very funny.
It's very funny. You don't hear anything because they don't have to do anything.
Like Bernie Sanders is just out.
Yeah.
Everything's okay.
Yeah. Just quiet. It's just quiet, quiet, quiet. Obama said some snarky thing, like he thinks the American people are better than to elect Trump. That's it.
He said that?
Yeah, that's it. But that was it. That's the only thing that he said. Because they're like, they don't want to...
Has he gotten behind Hillary Clinton?
I think... I don't know that he has endorsed her, but I imagine he will. I don't know for sure about that. But they're just watching this whole thing go down strategically. They're like, oh, yeah. Don't say anything. Just relax. Everyone stay cool. I mean, to me, like the leftists on Twitter need to, even though I retweeted this thing that a woman from the Middle East said, like, now you guys understand what it looks like when the darkest members of your society get behind a monster, something like that, because that happened in Iran. Mm-hmm. And but I think we all need to relax a little bit with the Trump being terrified of Trump, because it's anyone who's tweeting all these terror things about Trump, it feels like they don't understand just how bloodthirsty, malicious, and incredibly brilliant the Democratic Party is when it comes to destroying people.
But the Democratic Party is unfortunately led by a woman, which is just going to be harder to, I mean, obviously I'd love it to be a woman, and B, someone like Hillary Clinton, who in the same way that like Madonna is not a great actress, but she has every single ability to be one, and everyone would love her to be, you know, she could have any opportunity in the world, but she just went, as soon as the camera gets in front of her, she like, it just all seems like a lie.
Did you see the Benghazi trial that she had to sit in front of those right wingers who were grilling her forever? Did you see her handle that?
No, she was good.
Oh my God, she was amazing.
Well, that's good.
She's like shredded them. It was like watching people throw themselves into a sawmill. Like she's really good. I'm not saying I'm behind her. I'm not saying I don't think that
I'm behind her. I just haven't seen. She just seems a little like condescending and patronizing to people.
Sure, she is.
And that's not, and you know who doesn't? Obama. Like she doesn't know how to like how to like rally people, and I don't know, it just seems
she doesn't need to know how to rally people. People are going to rally to her no matter what, because
right.
What I mean, like how many, what about the Latinos? Who's going to vote for a guy who's going to deport all
that's
of
true.
Their family? Who's going to vote for that? The black vote? How many of them are going to vote for a guy whose dad was in the KKK?
No, you're right.
So it's so really, I don't think she needs to do anything. This, by the way, this all backs up my theory that Trump is on the side of Hillary, and this whole thing is a ruse to get Hillary elected.
That would be so cool.
Yeah, man, because he's sent checks to her. There's like he's endorsed her. He's given her
really
money. Yes. And this all backs it up, because that's how those fucking Clintons work, man.
I hear you.
This is Game of Thrones.
And that's why you don't like the Clintons.
What?
That's why you don't like the Clintons, well, because they seem so evil.
And in a way, that's...
Even though she's a woman and it would be cool to have a woman.
Yeah, you're right. They seem... But to me, it's like... it's not that I dislike Hillary Clinton or like Hillary Clinton.
That's a great conspiracy theory.
It's working. It's... like, think about it. Like, because just they had a little sit down with Trump. Supposedly, Bill. You haven't heard that before?
No.
Supposedly, Bill Clinton, the conspiracy theory goes like this. He just had a sit down. They're like, you know what? Why don't you run for president? You should run for president. Run for president. Let's see what happens. And knowing that just telling him, do whatever you want. You have nothing to lose.
That is so brilliant.
Get in there, say whatever you want.
So risky, though.
It's not really that risky.
Where do you have a conversation like that?
In Trump Towers, after having a Trump steak and a glass of Trump champagne.
Wearing your Trump slippers?
Yeah. Yeah, you just like do it. And that, because to me, I think what people forget when they are thinking about the government of the United States or the way things work here is that it's not what you think it is. This is not a functioning democracy. This is an empire. And it's been an empire for a long time. And it's run in the same way that empires are run. It's run through...
Trump sure got rid of Jeb Bush.
He mauled him.
Because I was sure it would be a Bush and a Clinton. Again, like you say, an empire.
Trump destroyed Jeb Bush forever. Like, Jeb Bush is like a laughingstock
now. He might kill himself.
He might kill himself, yeah. And Trump destroyed Christie. And Trump... You know, Christie is like now like sucking Trump's dick, which is amazing. That incredible video. Have you seen the awesome video of like that weird look in Christie's eyes as he like
realizes what he's done?
Yeah, it's the same look of like it's the look of
he seems dumb.
It's the look in Rosemary's Baby when she's like, "Can I see my baby?" Remember, like when she's like kind of finally like succumbed to the witches, and like that's the look on Christie's face. It's a diabolic look. It's a look of someone. It's a Faustian look. I have made a deal with the devil.
Yeah.
And he, God damn it, made me stand right fucking behind him in a press conference. I am doomed. I'm done. Right. It's beautiful. So Trump ripped apart Christie. He's ripping apart everyone. I'll tell you though, the darkness. Here's the real darkness. This is the real darkness here. Assuming that Hillary Clinton is not somehow using Trump as an amazing saw blade to destroy the party. Here's what's really scary. Trump, so the naive and probably completely wrong idea that this is a conspiracy, that Trump has been placed there by the Clintons, blah, blah, blah. Okay, let's imagine that it's the other way, that Trump is actually running for president, wants to be president, wants the job. He's a white nationalist. His dad...
With a power and money hungry hole that will... An attention hole, you know, hole that he just needs all of it.
Yeah, he wants it all. He wants to control. And so let's imagine... Here's the thing. I don't think he's going to get elected. It might be close. I don't think he's going to get elected. But what... has happened no matter what is he's activated a gene in a group of white people, because white people have a gene in them. A lot of them, they have a very specific gene that can be activated, and that is the gene of white supremacy, man. And if you're someone who is, this is what Jung says, if you're someone who is
activated by that,
if you're someone who hasn't confronted your own shadow, then you can end up getting sucked in to these kinds of nationalist movements. Mm. And even if Trump doesn't get elected, he still has woken this thing that I think has been kind of sleeping in the country. Mm-hmm. And this is why it's scary, some of the shit he says, which is like, we are the silent majority. Have you heard him say that?
Ugh.
That's one of his slogans. We are the silent majority. What's the opposite of a majority? Minority. We're not a minority. We are the silent majority who've been quiet all this time. And when he says silent majority, he's talking, I think, about David Duke. He's sending out signals to the white supremacists, and there's a lot of them in this country. There's a lot more than I think people want to admit
and we don't even see them. We're not in contact with them because we live in these cities that are on coasts, and people like that, at least I don't have anyone like that in my life.
You wouldn't know if you did. They've gone underground. They're very good at being secret. They don't talk about it. They don't say anything about it. They can't say anything about it. But a lot of them are there, and Trump sends out signals, man. He said something. Just watch. A lot of you guys out there who are like terrified by Trump and like hate him, I challenge you to watch some of his speeches so at least you understand why he appeals to people and you can understand who he is. Because a lot of people haven't even seen an entire Trump speech, what he's doing. It's really artful, really hilarious, very creepy, highly entertaining, but he's doing like prison-style winks to the white supremacists. Like I saw him, one of the things he said is something along the lines of, like my grandfather always says, a slow racehorse cannot create a fast racehorse. And that is a fucking eugenics. That's eugenics. That's like basic textbook white supremacy being disguised as something else. That's what that is. So he's sending out the fucking signal, man. And that's why when they asked him about the Klan, remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like,
I'd have to meet the guy. Or would he say they asked him about him? He's like, I don't want to, you know,
you're asking me about groups, these groups. I need to know about what the groups are you're talking about. It's like, well, I'm talking about David Duke and the KKK. Oh, because
he doesn't want to offend his followers, essentially.
Well, so what he did is immediately after that, he said, oh, yeah, no. He like rejected David Duke and the Klan, but first he didn't. And so all of these white supremacists, they understand somebody running for president can't come out and be like, yeah, I'm totally cool with the KKK.
But we've elected a black president. You still think there's just this like subculture of white supremacists living everywhere?
Yes. And a lot of them are cops.
Ugh.
That's true. I mean, it's an old tradition. It's an old tradition in this country. It didn't go away. Like, you think that it went away? It didn't go away. It's
right, but we've all kind of, I mean, imagine we, I was just at this church we were shooting, it was in Pasadena, and they said this church in the 60s was divided because of school bus, or because of the buses, and half of the church wanted there to be segregation on buses, and half didn't, and I was thinking, like, that was the 60s? Like, you forget, that was like...
Exactly.
20 years before we were born.
Exactly.
That was our parents' lives. There was like a debate whether or not black people could be on a bus with us.
Exactly.
But we've come so far, like that's not even in question anymore.
Well, look at your, I mean.
So I feel like that has, we have gone past that.
You're in a filter bubble. You know, you are living in Los Angeles, hanging out with entertainers. These are mostly left-leaning liberals who are completely open-minded. And or like have gone to like liberal colleges and have very specific kind of education and have been taught some very specific things. But that's not the country that we're in. We're talking about familial racism that has been taught from the moment you're born. You're just taught that. And
still, you think?
Absolutely. Oh, God, yes.
Because it used to be taught in schools, probably. It's not taught in schools anymore. Or showed in schools and in segregation. And
when was the last time you went to Alabama?
Maybe never.
You got to go there sometime. And
what's the main city there?
Mobile. Yeah, you got to go there sometime. I'm not saying everyone in Alabama is a racist. Absolutely not. Some very sweet
but
people.
But that's one state.
What?
That's one state.
Well, the South. Well, we're talking about the South. I mean, look at what happened with Katrina. Remember that? Remember, like, the city's flooded and no one did shit about it? No one does anything about it. Or, like, the fact that, like, cops just are mowing down black people all the time. No one cares. No one does anything. The cops never get convicted. Nothing happens.
No, I see what you're saying. I just have, I guess I had a more optimistic view of it.
I mean, we're talking about, like, the problem is that for whatever reason, there's an endemic racism. I mean, I hate to say it's true. There's like a kind of racism, not just here, but a lot, most people in the United States, they don't even know they're racist, but they're racist because in Afghanistan, one of Obama's drones will blow up a bunch of people in the Middle East and we won't do anything about it. Something that makes a school shooting seem like a picnic and we don't do anything about it. Why don't we do anything about it? Well, they're Middle Eastern. They're not like us. They're not us. You know, if that isn't racism, I don't know what is. So it's a kind of murderous. We are a very indoctrinated culture here, you know, and a lot of people. I'm not saying like the whole like get into the understand your white privilege or any of that bullshit.
No, I do understand it. And I do understand that, you know, the cops do seem like they're a problem. But I just feel like we have come a long way, but I guess maybe not far enough.
I mean, what's the, like, if you want to understand how racist this country is, or how racist the government is, or how racist the power structure is, look at prison populations. How many black people are in prison versus how many white people are in prison? Like, look at that. We've locked up a lot of them, man. And how many of them are there for any kind of real crime? Like, a lot of them are nonviolent drug offenders, you know? So it's like really... This is all deep politics. You're not supposed to. Let me find the statistic here. I didn't know this would go political, but I kind of like it. Let's find the statistic here. Black percentage of black people in prison. Let's just look this up real quick. Percentage of black people.
I mean, this is the most important thing right now, I think.
In America. Let's see. Percentage of black people in prison. So let's see. U.S. prison population. While people of color make up about 30% of the United States population, they account for 60% of those in prison. Now, when you think about that, the United States has, I think now it's the largest percentage of people in prison. Let's see, how many people in the United States in prison? In the USA in prison. Let's find this out right now. U.S. prison population, 474,000. There will be 474,000. So like almost half a million. Wait, the United States has the highest prison population. It has the second highest documented incarceration rate in the world, behind the tiny country Seychelles, which has the highest rate. Don't go there. But so there you go. We have the highest prison population.
I'm not saying I don't understand that there's racism. I'm just saying when you said that Trump has activated this gene, this white supremacy gene, I just want to believe that that's not true.
Oh, it's true. I mean, it's already there. I mean, we have the highest prison population in the world. And over half of the people in our prison are people of color. So now, if we had camps set up that we were just putting people of color, it would be more obvious. But because we call them prisons, it's not as obvious anymore, because the idea is, well, those people who are locked up, they deserve to be there. But then if you look at the reason that people are being incarcerated, and if you also look at the fact that a lot of the black people that are in prison didn't have access to the same kind of legal help that white people have, then you realize that really, no, they're not even locked up for any good reason at all.
So what's the antidote to the – so if Trump is activating this gene, what can we do as a culture to try to deactivate it and change it? And anyone who has it will hopefully let it lie dormant till they die, and then we don't pass it down to the next generation. I mean, that seems to be like an important – I guess what they're doing with the Oscars, trying to make sure that like, you know, everything is – equal as possible.
Yeah, well, I mean, making things, it's not the ultimate idea here would be somehow to stop doing an us or them thing, right? So it's like they're trying to divide us. They want to create a division. I think it serves some purpose to create a divided society. And so you have to look at it from the perspective of maybe no white people, no black people, no people of color, just earthlings, no Middle Eastern people. It's a crazy idea, but that really is the reality. We're just earthlings that happen to have different levels of melatonin in our skin, and that's pretty much it. And, you know,
that's what I believe, but it's very hard to, like, get people to think like that.
Addiction to culture, too. Don't forget that. A lot of people have a culture addiction. They feel like they are, you know, they're very attached to culture. And this is a heresy for a lot of, just to say it. But it's like this whole fucking thing of like the importance of your, to me, I really like Terrence McKenna's great speech on culture, which is culture is not your friend. It's an operating system that's been downloaded into you by your parents that causes a lot of problems.
What about tradition, though?
What about tradition?
Like Jewish culture. What if you just totally got rid of your Judaism and that sort of tradition?
Well, I mean, I think as long as you acknowledge you're playing a very beautiful game of make-believe, right? As long as you understand
that. See, this is why you're smart. You see that.
And not just with Judaism, but with every single culture, like, you know, every single thing. As long as you acknowledge that this is a game of make-believe, you are playing a game of make-believe that was invented a very long time ago. You know, actually, if you look at, like, there's a new thing that just came out. It's really cool. They think chimpanzees have some form of religion or tradition because they've, for whatever reason, chimpanzees have all started putting rocks around trees. And so it's
really... They just started?
They've been finding all these – I don't know how long they've been doing it, but they've been finding all these rocks around trees. So they've been filming chimpanzees, and you can look it up. It's a great YouTube clip. But the chimpanzees come up to the tree. They pick up a rock. They do this weird thing where they swing on the tree, and they throw the rock at the tree and then, like, shriek and run off. And they're all doing it. Like,
Wait, so when did this start?
We don't know when it started, but people are saying, shit, this might be – you know, one very primitive tradition is to like make stacks of rocks. And here these chimps are kind of doing that. And we don't know. It could be a sport. It could be some kind of joke. They seem to be taking it kind of seriously, but so it's really cool. It's really cool.
But let's say they have a new religion, and all of our religions and traditions and culture are that is a symbol, you know, that is a metaphor for what we do. However, can't you deny that certain religions or meditations or chants can take you to another level. So it's not like it's all just like to be frowned upon.
I love make-believe. What's wrong with make-believe? It's fantastic. It's the best. Pretending to be something that you're not, or imagining that you're this thing, or creating a system through which you can
become a better person.
Yeah.
Because you do become a better person through some religions.
Absolutely. They're beautiful. I mean, these are like...
It's like an art or something, or learning the piano or whatever it is.
It's amazing. I mean, all of them are incredible. I went to a...
Not all of them.
I think you could say all of them have something incredible about them, something really beautiful about them. It's just the problem starts happening when people fail to acknowledge that this is a game of make-believe, and that humans come first. Humans come before the
not just Earth. Jewish humans, not just Palestinian humans, not... Right? Because yeah. People believe that their people are the most important
right.
people. Like, I remember when I was learning to chant, they were like, make sure to chant for non-members too.
That thing.
And I was like, what?
Of course.
I never thought of it as members and non-members. Yeah. But that is the natural, even for something as open-minded as Buddhism, they're still trying to say members and non-members.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, they're still wearing costumes, aren't they? Still wearing team costumes. They're wearing still wearing the orange robes. The everyone's got a team costume that they're wearing. And that's fine. Teams are great. We need them. Teams are good. In business, we need teams. In sports, we need teams.
I have always hated team spirit.
I like teams. I think it's cool. A superorganism where humans join together for some purpose. We call them covens, an idea where everyone has a shared goal and they unify together. I think there's
something
beautiful.
I like artistic collaboration.
Yeah.
I think that is cool because that takes you to another level, and the higher thing is not you. It's like a piece of art.
And it feels so good too when you like it, – it's such a relief to be around a group of really talented people. You're experiencing it with your TV show.
Where everyone works together and everyone has different strengths and that each piece kind of creates the whole.
Yes, it's glorious. It's beautiful. And so this is not like we don't need teams. We do need them. It's just everyone is so, you know, sanctimonious about their – some people get just so caught up in the idea that their particular culture is the right culture, that their particular culture is real. And no, I'm sorry. Every human is a child. I don't care how old you are. You haven't been around in the universe long enough to understand anything that's going on. And we don't know anything that's going on. P.S. We don't know anything. Whether you're using some ancient mythology to define your subjective reality, or whether you're just using the far reaches of scientific understanding – bottom line is we don't know what's fucking going on. We don't even know what's under the ocean, mostly. You know, we're mostly ocean here on this planet. Did you know that?
Mm-mm.
Mostly ocean. Like, the right name for this planet is not Earth. The right name for this planet is water. That's the right name for the planet. And most of what's going on down there, we have no fucking clue. We have no idea. We have no idea what's going on just under our own ocean. We have no idea what's going on at the center of our planet. And we have a very little understanding of what's going on outside of our planet. 80% of the biomass on this planet is bacteria. Did you know that?
No.
80% of the biomass.
See, these are things I'd like in my app. I'd like to learn all this.
Well, read A Brief History of Nearly Everything. That's all I'm quoting. But 80% of the planet is invisible. And we've only been around on this planet for a flickering, fleeting amount of time. And so the idea that these like intricate rituals that people have decided to engage in for a very brief amount of time here on this planet have some kind of actual external validity that transcends the basic
we know when the second coming's happening.
No, you don't.
No, we know when the second coming is happening.
Yeah.
It already happened.
That thing. Yeah, that thing. It's all – see, this is all just – it's a bunch of – it's a – actually, you know, Sam Harris, who – I like, and then I don't like, and then I like again. He described ISIS as frightened children. He said it's like watching frightened children, like Lord of the Flies. You're just watching frightened children who have, you know, fallen prey to a kind of mind virus that is the particular version of Islam called Wahhabism or whatever. That it's a mind virus, and they've gotten addicted to this thing. That's not what's going down. So it's like, once you realize all that, make believe, and then figure out what is real. And then start trying to function from that spot.
Virtual reality.
Well, virtual reality is reality. That's a funny thing that we've created a distinction between reality and virtual reality, because it's all just reality. It's not like when you're in there, that's not real. It's real. It's
is
just...
it more real than putting your face in a flower?
Well, it's everything's just real. Nothing.
Right, because you're experiencing it.
Right, everything's just real. You know, but you got to find the I don't know. You got to find the place that where the rubber hits the road, so to speak. And the place where the rubber hits the road is a connection to the present moment for me. Like, if you want to find the root, you know, this is the quote from the Bhagavad Gita. A person who is attached to the flowery words of the scriptures is like a person who drinks water from a well when it flows everywhere. And that's in the Bhagavad Gita. So it's like, this scripture is right now. It's right in front of you. It's opened up. All of the, everything that Newton used to figure out Newtonian physics, everything Albert Einstein used, everything that the Prophet Muhammad or Jesus Christ or any of the great teachers, Moses, all of them, it all is from this fountain of happeningness, which is here in this moment. And that's all that there really is. No color, no...
That's why the transgender movement's so positive. Because kids don't even have to... My friend was telling me they're watching their nephew, or their... It was a niece, but she's decided she's a man. And she's 12. And she has a new name, and she doesn't relate to being a girl. And, you know, she has places online she can go to connect with other people who feel that way. But I think I've never really thought about that movement that much. But I do think that it's very positive for having less of us versus them.
Well, yeah. And also for overcoming body identification problems. Like, instead of, it's like teaching people not to identify with their body so much, or not to let their body be the thing telling them what you are. You know, it's
nothing will tell people what, you know, there's no color, no sex.
And it's fun too, right? Because the transgendered people don't realize, maybe some of them do. I don't know. I don't know a lot of them, unfortunately, but,
I don't either.
I just know two, but I wonder how much they understand just how mystical what they're doing is, because by looking at your body and seeing your genitals and deciding, okay, well, I'm not going to let my genitals tell me what my gender is. What you've entered into there is a kind of Buddhist exercise, which is like, okay, you're not your body. That's what you're saying there. You're saying that I am bigger than my body. I'm not going to let my body tell me who I am. So then the next step is, okay, well, I'm going to decide I'm a woman versus being a man. So now I've made the decision that I'm going to be a woman. Okay, great. Who's making the decision? Keep moving that fucking thing back, right? Keep moving it back so that you could...
That's cool.
Yeah.
Because that's what that guy talked about. Who's that guy? That German guy who had that book that everyone read? And he would talk about the voice. Like, he sat on a...
Gurdjieff?
No, not as cool as him. He, like, sat on a bench.
Oh, Eckhart Tolle.
Yeah, him. He, like, sat on a bench for, like... 10 years or something, yeah. And just started getting in tune with the voice that was telling him to sit on the bench.
Yeah, yeah, that thing. And
it's very hard to, like, access it.
Is it hard?
I mean, it just takes concentration. You have to sit on a bench. You know what I mean? You have to not have stimulation so much.
Okay, well, there you go. See, now look at that rule you just set up. There's a rule you just set up, which is, I can't have stimulation to experience a connection with the universe. What a funny rule, right?
Right.
Because no matter what, you're connected to the universe, stimulation or not. You could be lying in getting a massage with, like, virtual reality goggles on, which are broadcasting your Twitter feed with live dancers and Kim Kardashian being superimposed over everything, and yet you're still in the universe. You're still experiencing life. It's just that you've decided to put your attention on a specific thing, but that you're still here. There's no way out of it. You know, there's no matter how distracted you are, or you think you are, how whether you're sitting on a mountaintop by a beautiful brook staring at a rainbow, or whether you're in a New York subway looking at your phone, you're still in the universe. You're still in reality. You're still connected to everything. You're still part of a web of happeningness that is stretches into infinity. It doesn't matter where you're at. So the mind creates all these rules, which is a funny thing. It's always tricking you into thinking like, no, now is not the time where you can be. You can't be in the moment now. Not in traffic. You can't be in the moment now. Not when you're walking to work. You can't be in the moment now when you're at work. You're at work now. You can't be in the moment now. You're yelling at someone for not doing a good job.
That's what my inner voice sounds like.
That's the voice. But if you kind of look at what it's done there, is it's done this hilarious trick, hasn't it? Because it's created a funny little thing in your life where, like, there's just a tiny little moment where you can actually be in the present moment according to the rules of the ego.
Right, like when you smoke pot or something.
Yeah. When you're sitting staring at a flower, when you're, you know, okay, now I'm here, now I'm here. No, you're here no matter what. You're always here. That's one of the things the Ram Dass people say that I love is they say, are we here yet? It's yes.
That's funny.
It's cool. You are here no matter what. And the mind will trick you into thinking that there's only a few moments in your day where you can really be in your day. It's hilarious. No. You could at this very second become exactly what you already are, which is the very crest of the wave of happeningness in the universe, the very tip of all existence manifesting in this moment, no matter what you're doing.
So we just need to get all the bigots and racists in the South to listen to your podcast.
Good luck. But what we need to do is, in all seriousness,
sorry, this is very serious.
What we need to do is be kinder to ourselves and to stop creating, in the same way that maybe we shouldn't break up the universe into
black and white, his and her,
maybe we also shouldn't break up the universe into virtual reality and reality. Maybe we shouldn't break up in the universe into, oh, now I'm not meditating, now I am. Maybe we shouldn't break up the universe into all these ridiculous distinctions that our mind is placing on the field of infinity to try to give us a sense of self, because that's what we're afraid of losing. We don't want to lose ourselves. We don't want to have that for whatever reason. It's really funny. We don't want to go swimming into the great deep ocean of infinity.
You should get on Oprah.
Oprah, let me on. I know you got to get acupuncture.
You're just so good at explaining this stuff. It's really good, Duncan. I'm so glad you have a podcast.
Thank you, Natasha. Thank you so much for coming here. Congratulations on your marriage and your burgeoning, flowering life that's happening right now. It's so cool, man. I'm really happy and happy for you, Moshe.
Okay, one more question.
Yeah.
So can you recommend anything to try to help stay in the moment? Because Eckhart Tolle had that very dry idea, if you listen to his book on tape, to just sit and think of the person thinking the thoughts. Like, what do you think? Like, what do you do?
Okay, number one, you are in the moment. No way out of it.
I am right now because I feel like my voice is being
no matter what you're
broadcasted.
No matter what, you're in the moment. Even if your mind will, you're always in, you can't get out of the moment. There's no escape, number one, no escape. You cannot get out of the predicament that you're in, which is that you are inextricably, permanently, eternally connected to the fabric of all things. There's no way out of that. You're here. There's no way out of it, right? Okay, so that's number one. Just there's no way out. So that is an unappealing, for a lot of people, place to be. And so we try to escape from it by giving the illusion of a self, of busyness, of a life. And that's our ego identity. So really, the truth of the matter is you can't get out of the moment even if you wanted to. There's no escape. You literally can't get out of the moment because that's all there is. And you're here. So sorry, you're in the moment no matter what. And so the whole idea of like, well, how do I really get into the moment is there's no way out of it. I challenge you to get out of the moment. If you can get out of the moment, you're a time traveler. Get out of the moment and what, to the future that doesn't exist or a past that's not real, you can't do it. So the question is, how do I experience peace, right? That seems to be the real question. Like, how do I feel? How do I end?
And how do I inspire myself to be able to spread it?
Right. Well, I think if you're in it, you'll spread it naturally. I think if you find some kind of equanimity or some kind of focus or something, theoretically, that you would naturally spread that. But there are some, all that fucking mind bullshit I just set aside, there are some really simple exercises that are infuriatingly simple that most people just say, go to the breath, follow the breath, go back to the breath. The breath is the ultimate representation of this entanglement with the rest of the universe, because when you breathe in, you're taking in eternity, and when you breathe out, you're adding to eternity. So you can go to the breath.
That's a good one.
Or another one is feel your feet on the ground, feel your feet in your shoes is a real simple trick. Another one is, if you're sitting down, recognize that you don't have to exert yourself, that the chair is going to hold you. A lot of people don't realize that they don't have to help a chair sit down, which is representative of your whole life. Like, if you look at the way you're sitting, a lot of people are like, you're kind of like tight, or you're like sort of like doing the work for the chair. So you can kind of just sink down into a chair. And then that, of course, represents like, oh, guess what? That not only is the chair holding you, but everything's holding you. Everything's holding you. And sink back into that. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. All of that shit, you can do all of it or not do any of it. It still isn't going to change the predicament, which is that you are everything, experiencing the very transient moment of selfness. Which is, so what I mean is, there's no rush here. Just stop trying to, you don't have to like, and maybe I'm just telling myself that because I'm not disciplined enough when it comes to meditation, but I don't think there's much of a rush. I don't think you really need to worry about anything. I mean, that's the blasphemy. You don't have to worry about anything. You're taken care of. It's all right here. It's already being taken care of. You don't have to, there's no push-ups you need to do here.
Just don't sink into entropy.
Or you can. Sink into entropy for a while. Have some fun down in the land of entropy if you want. You can. No, you can. You can see.
You should write a children's book about the land of entropy.
Still the present moment. No matter where you go, whether you go to the lowest hell or the highest God realm, you're still dealing with the exact same stuff. So it doesn't matter. You can find the present moment in the deepest. You could be laying in a pile of fucking McDonald's wrappers with cigarette ash all over your chest, staring at cockroaches climbing on your ceiling.
And be in the moment.
Yes. There's no escape. And I think that that is kind of the thing that bothers people, because you want to believe that you can distract yourself. You want to believe that you can get lost. You want to believe that there's some way out of this thing that you're in. There's no way out. There's no escape. There's no safety. There's no nothing you can climb into. And this is why Chogyam Trungpa describes the act of having a self or being a self. He says it's as though you have become a termite that has burrowed into your delusion and has tried to create a house there. You're just pretending that this is stuff that around you is permanent or real or lasting, or that you are real or permanent or lasting. And you're doing that because a lot of people would prefer that to the reality of the situation, which is ridiculous, because the reality situation is you're completely free.
I feel like I just watched a really good production of Our Town.
I hope that's a compliment. What does that mean?
It's just a good, it's just a compliment.
Thank you, Natasha. And thank you for coming on the show. Good luck with your acupuncture.
I'm probably not going to go.
Oh, you're not? You're skipping out? I wouldn't go.
I can't drive to the West Side.
I wouldn't drive to the West Side.
Because, again, I know that 2 hours there and back, it's going to be really hard to be in the moment. Maybe we could choose to do things that will make you feel more fun in the moment, you know?
Well, this whole thing of like being in the moment, you know, just don't be. How about this? Here's something you should do. You know that's funny cure for hiccups, where if you try to make yourself hiccup, sometimes your hiccups will stop. maybe for the next few days, instead of trying to be in the moment, or you should try to be out of the moment. Like, spend the next few days just doing everything you can to distract yourself from the present moment and see what happens. Like, really do everything you can. Like, really get out of here. See how far away from the moment you can get. Just try it. Good luck. Good luck. There's no way out of this, man. You can't get out of the moment. I mean, you can be distracted, but you're still here. Anyway, Natasha, thank you. Hare Krishna. Thanks for listening, pals. That was Natasha Leggero. You can find out everything you need to know about her by going to natashaleggero.com. A big thanks to squarespace.com for sponsoring this episode. Go to Squarespace and use offer code Duncan to get 10% off your first order. Don't forget to get tickets for my tour. And thank you all so much for listening to this episode. I will see you again this week with another episode of the DTFH. Hare Krishna. See you soon.